Boving here for the Mystery Project. And tonight, it's episode 3 of Charles Tiddler's Pocket City Blues, wherein Horton Spring tries to find a track to keep his life on. Horton's motives are only the best when he tries to help a young jazz singer. But in typical Horton Spring style, everything turns to ashes, and the resulting threats are deadly. Michael Hogan stars in Pocket City Blues, Part 3, Rose Violin.
Victoria, British Columbia, March 4th. The only sentence in the calendar, a declarative one. March 4th. Let's declare an early spring in Pocket City. Declare the licking grass spreading green fire through the sun-painted town. Declare plum and cherry trees to line the foaming streets with pom-poms of orgasm. Declare sitting on a rock in the sun. Declare spring. My name is Horton Spring. I'm a student of the blue. Signs at the intersection of Quadra and Hillside bid me to pause and ponder. Have you tried your onions fried? Why seek ye the living among the dead? With the green light, I speed up Quadra, turn right to climb Towpath, hang a left onto the rise to take it all the way to the top, and park beside the old city reservoir.
Let's take a look around.
You got the walk?
A gravel path between blackberry brambles and the chain-linked fence of the reservoir leads to a high meadow of wild grass and a stand of rare gary oak trees that twist and gnarl with new green. Far below, the clockwork beehive of Pocket City. This is the rise. Early spring, and this 45-year-old's fancy turns to pitch and catch with his son.
One more.
I'm tired of pop-ups.
Sharp ground ball.
Second hop.
Hey, good snag.
Fun.
Yeah.
You should have brought the bat, huh?
I'll probably lose the ball up here.
Are you taking me home now?
Yes, so. But first, there's a young singer lives around here someplace. I've been trying to get a hold of. Her name's Rose Violin.
Never heard of her.
No, you will.
That's the song of songs.
Less than a block down the rise, I pull over on the steep shoulder of the road and park behind an old Toyota sedan with a Camison College sticker blistering on the back bumper. A red brick path between bushes of yellow forsythia lead to the main floor apartment of a once proudly bright blue house with a front porch big enough to park a one-ton truck.
Dad, there's no one home.
You got a pen or a pencil?
Are you kidding? Tyson!
Good evening, gentlemen.
The boy at the door has the almond-eyed androgynous beauty of a small deer. He bows deeply from the waist with a flourish as graceful as a 17th century courtier.
How may I be of service to you today?
I told you not to answer. Hello?
Rose Violin?
We make eye contact, and her natural good looks sour behind the scar of a fierce, aggressive frown. There's enough luggage under her eyes for 2 weeks in Mexico.
Who are you?
Horton Spring, and this is my son, Nelson.
How old are you? I'm 10.
14.
You're the radio guy?
Yes.
Here, I made this raptor for you.
Origami?
I've been trying for weeks to get you on the phone.
You have a hard time taking a hint?
It's just a piece of paper.
I think you're an extraordinarily gifted singer.
I have a very, very special drawer.
I'd like to feature your CD on my late night blues show.
So what?
I don't sing the blues.
I play some jazz singers, too.
And nobody can look at this stuff.
I don't know why my former agent sent you a copy of the CD. I've had it withdrawn from all the stores, and I don't want any of your airtime, period.
But you're so good. You deserve the exposure.
Probably full of dumb crap.
Exposure is the last thing I want.
I changed my mind.
I don't understand.
Give me back my rap.
It's none of your business to understand.
Stupid piece of paper.
It's not.
You know, I've listened to your show, and I hate the way you always dig around into the private lives of people like Billie Holiday.
That
biographical anecdotes.
Oh, you just relish exposing.
Skinny Minnie.
Sorry, you see it that way. Here's my card, in case you change your mind.
Oh, I won't change my mind.
Hey, boy! Nelson, look!
Don't you ever, young man, lay a hand on my son.
He started it!
You're twice his size! You stop it!
In a situation like that, you take a time out.
I gave him a timeout. Dad, there's a note under the windshield wiper.
The note, written in pencil on a page torn from a composition book and folded in four, says, "Stay away from Rose Violin." I look up, and two blocks down the rise, the Toyota sedan is making a left turn onto Buena Vista. I make my way back down to Quadra, turn right at Bay, and take it all the way to the Point Ellis Bridge crossing into Vic West. In the far distance, Razor Blue Mountains cradle the soft poached egg of the setting sun.
So is she the singer, your new girlfriend?
No. And I'm not in the market.
Girls are a waste of time.
That's a pretty general statement.
Every guy I know with a girlfriend is a sick puppy zomboid. Travis, my best friend, quit the basketball team over a girl. I'll die before I get a girlfriend.
Famous last words.
Wanna bet? You'll lose. Night, Dad.
See you in the weekend. Bring it back. I drive through Vic West. The quickest route downtown to the Sea Blue Studios is the Blue Bridge to Johnson Street. I go on air at midnight and still have a lot of work. I make a sharp right into the parking lot of the Payless gas station. The car following immediately behind continues down the street and takes a left at the light. A Toyota sedan with a Camison College sticker on the rear bumper. Guess I've made a new friend. All right. This is Midnight Blues. My name is Horton Spring. The phone line is open until 3 a.m. Talk to me. Midnight Blues. Midnight Blues. Midnight Blues. Damn. I let it ring. 8, 9, 10 times, and finally all is quiet on the Western Front. I call *69. Call return.
The number of your last caller is 3602583. The party you are trying to reach does not accept calls on this number.
After the show, I go home to my apartment above the Red Mango Cafe. The clock on the VCR flashes 3:37. And my answering machine has 13 messages. 13 messages. 13 hang-ups.
Hello.
I hate these one-way relationships. I unplug the phone, throw the deadbolt, shut off the lights, and go to bed. Postcard Inner Harbor. Lunch baggers in shirt sleeves roost on the park benches in Bastion Square. The sun shines like a fresh coat of paint. I lean against the rough trunk of a weeping elm as Rose Violin descends the granite steps of the Heritage Building where she works as a government clerk. I doubt she'll be happy to see me, but I want to know some things.
What are you doing here?
I thought you might have been trying to call me last night.
You've got a lot of nerve. Excuse me, this is my lunch hour.
Miss Violin, I was talking to you.
Michael, you are forbidden to talk to me outside of the office.
Michael is a fat man in his late 50s, bald with an NDP mustache. His eyes are like flashbulbs. They pop on and go off.
Drop the charges against me or I will ruin you.
Stop harassing me.
Rose loops her arm into mine in such a way that we stand together closely side by side. Michael flaps his arms like a turkey trying to fly. Under each arm, there's a sweat stain the size of a fried egg.
So, is this your lover?
This is my lawyer.
But this incident never happened.
Thank you.
Let's have lunch.
Cigarette?
I'm a secondhand smoker. So, who's Michael?
Michael Morrison is my supervisor. 6 weeks ago, he sexually harassed me, and I reported him.
Good for you.
There's nothing good about it.
Well, it's good that there's a policy to protect you.
Most of my coworkers think I'm out to get Michael. Loyal bureaucrat, family man brought low by a single mother, divorcee jazz singer. It's a classic case of blame the victim. I'm a virtual prisoner in my own home. I don't answer the phone. I don't answer the door. I go to work. I go home. They may as well strap a monitor to my ankle.
That's why you withdrew your CD from the stores?
I have to tell you something. Your ex-wife phoned me at work this morning.
Jennifer?
Evidently, your son told her I was your new girlfriend.
I'm really sorry that happened.
She warned me to stay away from you.
So I guess you know a lot about me from her point of view.
She said you once did a house.
A living room. I destroyed our living room one night 2 years ago. The cops came and took me away. I haven't had a drink since. For 6 months, I was in a workshop at a men's violence center. It isn't much, maybe, but people can and do change their lives.
Yeah, maybe people can. But men don't.
Speaking of men, who do you know at Camosun?
Is that any of your business?
Somebody is making it my business. Somebody with a Toyota sedan who left a note on my car telling me to stay away from you.
When did this happen?
While I was at your place last night.
You saw him?
Only his car. He followed me across town. And I think he was later responsible for some crank phone calls. Who is he?
Oh.
You know, it's all right. Here, I'll help you pick it up.
My purse. What a mess.
Pen. Lipstick. I reach under my chair to retrieve her phone bill. And I can't help but notice she has charges for both call screen and alternate number display. That everything?
Yeah, thank you. There's a guy I know, Jerry Spinks. He sat beside me in a journal writing class. Jerry and I went out for a coffee and, you know, just a couple of times. And one night, well, he had ideas about us that I didn't share. So
you broke it off?
I lost some things, my journal and some laundry.
Laundry? So you suspected Jerry?
No, not first. There's a young man named Danny who lives in the basement below me. I used to hire him to babysit, but I didn't like the way he handled Tyson. So I fired him. And we had words. After that, funny things started to happen around the house. Like, one day, I found a dead rat in my mailbox.
What motive would Jerry have to steal the journal?
I don't know. But the last time I saw him, he was really weird. And he knew things about me that I have never told anyone except...
Your journal. But it seems to me that Michael Morrison is the one who would get the most mileage out of possession...
Enough, please. If I lose my job, I'll lose everything. I'll lose my son. Excuse me, I have to get back to work now.
1:45 p.m., a perfect day. I drive up to the rise and park in Rose's driveway. I walk around the side of the house to the basement door.
What do you want?
The young man at the basement door has a chartreuse mohawk haircut and a hatchet face that probably stopped smiling at puberty. He wears baggy jeans and a white t-shirt hand-painted with tar that says, "Got a problem? Fight me." He's standing barefoot in water a quarter of an inch deep.
My name's Horton Spring.
And I'm Bleeping Noah.
Name in the mailbox says Danny Rip.
What's it to you?
I'm a friend of Rose Violin.
She has friends? Guess you haven't met Tyson yet. Total psycho brat.
Did you physically abuse her, son?
Is that what she said? Oh, look at this place.
The water extends into the whole of the bachelor flat. Behind Danny, on a yellow Formica table, is a .30-06 rifle. And beside it, a box of shells.
I'm not exactly a duck. I don't look like a duck. I don't have feet like a duck. I don't quack. No, I'm not a duck. But this morning, I wake up to this. And I find a hose running in my clothes closet. Who put it there? 10 times out of 10, Tyson.
Is that rifle registered with the police?
Are you a cop?
No, I'm not.
Blakely.
There it is, parked across the street. The Camison Toyota. I walk around the back of the house, slip behind a lilac hedge, and make my way slowly to the street. I duck, run across the street, and I'm behind the Toyota. Slowly, I walk to the passenger side window and look in. Jerry Spinks is about 35, blonde, good-looking, weak chin. He doesn't see me, stares straight ahead and grips the steering wheel with both hands as if it were a life preserver. His knuckles are white. There's something like pleasure in his face and something like pain. The trouble is, he isn't really here. Jerry turns his head and looks at me. Through the rolled up window, I mouth the words.
Talk to me.
I run back to Danny's. I put my shoulder to the door. A pungent, cordite blue haze drifts above the bare mattress where Danny sits with his head in his hands.
Go away and leave me alone.
I take the rifle from his lap and eject the cartridge. I call 911 and tell the operator what happened. I look around. Danny's CD player is 100 shards of black plastic and in major need of repair. I sit down beside Danny. Two running shoes, like little boats, bob in the water at the foot of the mattress. In the heel pocket of each shoe is an origami dinosaur. Danny, everything's going to be okay. ...3:15 is the time on the clock on the wall of the Royal Jubilee Hospital emergency room.
Danny?
This is Danny.
A psychiatric nurse by the name of Ben puts his arm around Danny and leads him step by little step down a fluorescent lit hallway.
I can't...
Ben is as burly as a bear and as gentle as a teddy. Head down like a yearling calf enters a slaughterhouse. Danny enters the padded room. I walk to my car in the hospital parking lot. Across Fort Street is a family restaurant. And I'm thinking, in a world such as this one, I could use a cup of coffee. I cross the street to the restaurant and, surprise, parked by the front door is the Camison Toyota. Then I see him through the window, in the furthest booth against the back wall. A man with a very weak chin. In the seat across the booth from Jerry is Michael Morrison. Sweat bubbles on his forehead like grease on a hot skillet. What do you do in a situation like this? You confront your demons. I enter just in time to see Michael throw his napkin into Jerry's face. Take that. Michael squeezes out of the booth and waddles his way across the crowded room. He almost walks right through me.
Michael, hello again. Another incident that never happened?
You're not a lawyer.
And you, sir, are not a human being.
I slide into the only vacant seat in the restaurant.
Talk to me.
Jerry bolts to leave. Hey. I grab his wrist.
Here, outside, or in hell. Your choice.
Is everything okay here?
Your call, Jerry.
Everything's fine.
Can I get anything else? Dessert.
I'll take a cup of coffee, please.
There's a minimum charge of $2.50.
Make that a fresh cup of coffee.
Okie dokie.
Talk to me.
What do you want me to talk about?
Why are you stalking Rose Violin?
I'm not stalking.
You park outside her place and spy on her. You follow her around. You spy on her friends. You make phone calls.
I'm protecting her.
What's the story, Jerry?
I met Rose at Camosun. And one night I gave her a ride home. Her place was a mess. Broken dishes, lamps. And her babysitter, Danny, was sitting on top of Tyson. Had him pinned to the floor. Rose was furious, ordered Danny out of her apartment. I helped her put Tyson to bed and insisted on spending the night.
You slept with her. Did you?
I slept on her living room sofa.
What happens next?
Next morning, I gave Tyson a ride to school and dropped Rose off at work. Later, I found 3 pages torn from her journal on the floor of my back seat.
I read them. That's abuse, Jerry.
And the next time I saw Rose, I said things I could only know from having read her journal, and she accused me of stealing it and has refused to see me or talk to me since. But there's no way I can prove my innocence to her.
But you're not innocent, Jerry.
Look, I figured Danny set me up, so I started watching the house, hoping I could catch him out. And then she would take me back.
In the meantime, you make a deal to sell the 3 pages to Michael Morrison, the man who wants to ruin her.
But I didn't go through with it. That's why he walked out just now. Look, I love her so much.
Yeah, right. I take out one of my cards, and on the back I write down an address and a telephone number. I give the card to Jerry.
Men's Violence Center? Why are you giving me this?
If you have to ask the question, Jerry, you don't have the answer.
Here. Give this to Rose.
A sealed envelope?
3 pages from her journal.
I get home at 10 to 5. It's been a full day, but I still have to make a couple of phone calls. One to Rose and one to...
Hello, Jennifer Spring speaking.
Hi.
Horton, I haven't got any time for you right now. I'm expecting a call any moment from the architect who's drawing up our new house plans.
Well, apparently you had lots of time for Rose Violin this morning.
I think the people have a right to know what kind of man you really are.
I have a right to a private life. Stop pumping Nelson for information about
me. I don't pump him. If I ruined it with you and your new girlfriend, tough.
You didn't ruin anything. I'm seeing her tonight.
I've got a call on the other line. Bye.
Go away.
Hi, Tyson. How you doing?
I hate your kid. Big black spiders should eat him to death.
I'm sorry about what happened last night. Is your mother home?
No.
Hi.
Evening, Rose.
Well, won't you come on in?
He doesn't want to.
Tyson.
It's okay. I don't have to come in.
See?
Tyson, can I have a minute alone, please, with Mr. Spring?
No.
He can stay.
I do what I want to do when I want to do it, and nobody can stop me.
Well, guess what? Michael Morrison announced to the entire office this afternoon that he's taking an early retirement.
Handsome package?
Well, I guess so, because he's flying to Belize for a month's vacation.
Nice work if you can get it. Here, according to Jerry Spinks, this envelope contains 3 pages of your journal.
Oh, I thought you had the whole thing.
No, I don't, but I know where it is. And so does Tyson.
You just want to have sex with my mother.
Tyson, stop it.
Your journal is in a very, very special drawer.
No! No,
Tyson!
I follow Rose through the living room into a back bedroom where a fishbowl lies shattered in the middle of the floor.
No,
Rose gets down on her knees to scoop up a small fish as bright as the shard of a rainbow. Her hand is bleeding. She runs into the bathroom.
I hate you!
Tyson charges me with a pair of scissors in his right fist, but I grab the boy and hold him close to my chest. The scissors drop to the floor.
Is child restraint, son.
Rose breaks the tiny padlock in the bottom desk drawer. The desk drawer contains a black and white photo of Virginia Woolf, a journal, and what looks like some clean laundry.
My good and lovely boy.
Tyson kicks and kicks, and I hold him like an underwater swimmer holds his breath. I don't let go. How's Tyson?
Oh, he's asleep, finally. You know, he told me that when he's mad at me, he feels like putting a dead rat in the mailbox. Horton, what am I going to do for him?
Keep coming back. Never quit. Never walk away. I put my arms around Rose and give her a good hug. And it is like a friend who hugs a good friend. The fragile bug in the green light of day will never know a broken thing, will never know the wreckage burst by the new leaf. Declare the long shadows behind us. Declare spring in Pocket City. This is Midnight Blues, and tonight we feature the jazz singer Rose Violin. My name is Horton Spring. I'm a student of the blues.
I love you, hum the April breeze. I love you, echo the hills. I love you,
Heard Rose Violin, Episode 3 of Pocket City Blues by Charles Tittler. Our cast tonight included Michael Hogan as Horton Spring, Susan Hogan as ex-wife Jennifer, Chris Lubbock as Nelson, Brenda Critslow as Rose Violin, Neil Dennis as Tyson, Alessandra Giuliani as Danny, Vincent Gale as Jerry, Tom Macbeth as Michael Morrison, Sharon Heath as the waitress, and Sarah Mariaros sang the song. The music was provided by the Dave Harris Quartet, augmented by pianist Tom Vickery. The recording engineer was Chris Cutras. The sound effects were by Joe Silva. The associate producer was Dagmar Kathunkinen. Pocket City Blues is produced and directed in Vancouver by Don Kowalczyk. The executive producer of the Mystery Project is Bill Howell. I'm Bob Boving, thanking you for listening.